This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. During the gas crisis of the 70s, the government raised mileage standards for cars, even while encouraging energy conservation. Automobile manufacturers responded, and average miles per gallon shot up. But the crisis passed, and Americans began demanding larger cars, which reversed many of the gains that came out of the crisis. Well, today we find ourselves in another energy crisis, one that may prove to be more serious. Gas prices are higher than ever. Most believe they will never return to the levels most Americans are accustomed to, and the impact is being felt across the economy. Americans are changing their driving habits, buying smaller cars with smaller engines. The waiting list for hybrid vehicles is growing, but let's face it, if the price of oil is rising and the supply is dwindling, aren't cars that run on fuels other than gasoline inevitable? The problem, of course, is the infrastructure to distribute alternative fuels. Hydrogen fuel cells need hydrogen. Try finding that at your local filling station. But two fuels that might become swiftly practical are electricity and natural gas, and the infrastructure to deliver them conveniently already exists. Your home could become your gas station today if your car ran on electricity. Just plug it into the wall. And if you have natural gas coming into your home, filling up your natural gas-powered car might be a cinch. So this hour, we take a look at the future of transportation and how soon it may arrive. Ron Servin is Project Development Engineer for Hybrid Technologies Incorporated, which has a new development facility in Mooresville. Mr. Servin is an accomplished race car driver and technician, holding several track records. He's even built custom cars for the Austin Powers films and a Corvette limo for Mystery Men. So I guess if he can embrace hybrid technology, so can most of the rest of us. Welcome.
Thank you very much.
Nice to see you. Jason Wager, I'm going to have the problem again with you. You've been on the program before. We had the same problem last time. Jason Wager is coordinator of the Centralina Clean Fuels Coalition of the Centralina Council of Governments, which serves the nine-county Greater Charlotte region. The Clean Fuels Coalition is a voluntary grassroots network of stakeholders focusing on clean transportation technologies with an eye toward reducing dependence on petroleum, improving air quality, and providing greater domestic economic opportunities. Welcome back.
Glad to be back.
You're very welcome. And Mark Riley is also with us by phone. He is the Eastern U.S. Regional Manager of the Clean Energy Corporation. That's a company founded by T. Boone Pickens, who you may have seen on television recently in a campaign to urge Americans toward newer, cleaner, and in many cases, renewable energy sources. Mark Riley joins us from New Hampshire. Thanks for being here.
Thank you, Mike.
Let's begin with you, Ron, because your company develops what you call hybrid cars, because that's the name of your company, Hybrid Technologies. But when we think of hybrids, most of us, we think of gasoline and electric battery-powered cars in combination, where the gasoline engine kicks in occasionally and sometimes, and when you're slowing down, the car charges the battery, etc. But you are developing lithium-powered vehicles and products, and in fact, not just developing them, they're on the road.
Yeah, that's correct. We're building cars that are 100% lithium battery-operated. You know, the same thing like you were talking, you drive them home, plug them in your garage, get up the next morning, drive it out, and they drive, perform at least as good as their gasoline predecessors did. Very dependable. A lot of the moving parts and everything that a lot of costs and maintenance mm-hmm. and all that type of stuff used to go into these cars is gone now. So realistically, you've got a car that might be a little bit more expensive to buy initially, but over the length of the time you own that car, between your fuel costs going and your maintenance costs going down, that car practically pays for itself.
Because there are fewer moving parts in an electric car, correct?
Yeah, absolutely. There's a lot fewer moving parts. A lot of the parts that normally wear or get contaminated by burning is gone.
So all the cylinders are gone. All the gaskets for the oil pan are gone because there is no oil, correct?
Yeah, that's correct. No fuel filters, no air filters. It's just all gone.
And there's no transmission.
There is transmission.
Oh, there's transmission. Okay.
Yep. Our car does come with maintenance. The smaller cars get a gear oil change at 25,000 miles, and the bigger cars get a gear oil change at 100,000 miles.
Okay. In your literature, you say that all electric cars can be charged by using household electricity and that they have zero emissions. But isn't that just a little bit misleading? Because the energy, the electricity comes from somewhere, and it comes from the electric company, and the electric companies around the country are facing an ever-increasing demand for power on a limited grid that's already out of date and needs help. And Duke Power in our region is trying to build coal-powered plants because we haven't built a nuclear plant in a long time, and there are problems associated with nuclear power. There are problems associated with the dirt that comes from coal, etc. Aren't we just moving the dirt, the byproduct of this, the emissions from the tailpipe to the stack at the power plant?
Well, it's you do have to generate power in one way or another. But there's so many, once again, alternative ways of generating that electricity now, and whether it be water power or wind power or nuclear, coal is actually becoming a smaller and smaller entity of how you're getting your electricity now. Mm-hmm. I'm told the state of California now is down to 3% coal fire on the whole state for electricity now.
Tell me this. Why haven't organizations like NASCAR, even Formula One — this may sound silly to a race fan, but maybe not — why haven't they fielded some races using electric cars?
I think a lot of it goes back in history, and they have to put on a show. So they have to make sure that those cars are...
Wouldn't that be a show, though?
Seriously. Well, it is, and we are actually developing some stuff right now, but they have to make sure that show goes on, that there's all the safety aspects, everything that they've been building into.
Well, it wouldn't be the major event. It would be like a side event, it would seem to me. And that's the whole – I mean, stock car racing got started because guys like to tinker with cars and race them. Well, why not? Can you tinker with an electric car? Is there anything to tinker with?
You can. There is a little bit more of a safety issue in that you are dealing with some higher voltages and things like that, you know. So it is a technology that you want to make sure is safe for the user as well as the mechanics, et cetera, that might be working on the car, pitting the car. But there is definitely some racing stuff in the works, so you may see something soon.
Good. Mark Riley is with us from New Hampshire. He's the regional manager for the Clean Energy Corporation, the Eastern Division of the Clean Energy Corporation. They supply liquid natural gas for use as fuel to the Dallas Area Rapid Transit Company, it's not a company, it's probably part of the City of Dallas, and other mass transit systems, as well as to fleets used in business. Talk about liquefied natural gas as a fuel, and how does it differ from what, say, Piedmont natural gas supplies to our homes for cooking and heating?
Well, Mike, actually, just to clarify, we do deliver not only liquefied natural gas fueling infrastructure and fuel solution, but we do also provide compressed natural gas, which is, typically we tap right into the gas pipeline system, and like Piedmont Natural Gas, and from there we compress it up to 3,600 psi, and the vehicle runs on that fuel. Liquefied natural gas is a super cooled form of natural gas. What it does, it allows you to create a much more dense form of natural gas, so you can store more fuel in a given amount of volume space on the vehicle. So LNG, or liquefied natural gas, is typically used in your heavy-duty applications, like over-the-road tractor-trailer trucks, trash trucks, and some transit buses. Out in Los Angeles, the Port of Los Angeles and Long Beach just recently began implementing a very strict port vehicle replacement plan, where we suspect over half of the vehicles, there's about 16,000 vehicles, will be running on natural gas or liquefied natural gas or compressed natural gas in the next 5 to 10 years. Majority of those vehicles, because they're over the road, will be using liquefied natural gas or LNG.
So am I completely wrong when I said in the opening that you could plug an electric car in at home and fill it up? Your home can become your gas station, or if you have gas coming into your home, you could put a hookup onto your car for a natural gas powered car. Is that wrong? You really couldn't do that, or you could do that?
Well, actually, Mike, I fuel my car up at home as well. I've got a natural gas Honda, and I have a device called a fill unit. It's created, it's built by a company out of Toronto called FuelMaker, and you hook it into your house gas line, and overnight it will fill your vehicle. So actually, in a lot of areas where we operate, in California and New York, Honda Motor Company, which produces, say, off-the-line natural gas vehicle, will help the customer purchase a fill unit, which they will they can put into their home and gas up their vehicle. And
so essentially, the fill unit compresses the gas that's coming from the gas line. Is that what it does? How much energy does that take to operate the fill unit?
Actually, not a whole lot. I live in an old house up here in New Hampshire, and I haven't really seen any impact on my electric bills. It's like probably running a couple lights or your refrigerator when you have it on, and typically a commuter is only going to use maybe a gallon or two a day. So you're looking at maybe it running for a few hours.
Jason, anybody in North Carolina running on natural gas powered cars liquid natural gas powered cars?
I'm not as sure about the LNG, but I know CNG is definitely around. In fact, the city of Gastonia had several vehicles many years back. I think above 20 pickup trucks on natural gas. They've got a natural gas transit bus. We've just recently, I was part of a grant program that awarded some funds to Piedmont Natural Gas to demonstrate a heavy-duty dump truck as well, and that's a project that's in the offing. So they're definitely around, and we have stations. Often they're publicly accessible and publicly owned and operated.
One of the problems with oil, gasoline-powered vehicles, obviously, is the emissions that they produce, but also the potential for pollution of the environment at the source where you're drilling for this, and you have to drill for natural gas as well. Are the possibilities of environmental contamination the same in a natural gas well, because some of the gas accompanies oil, etc., or are they less?
I would think Mark would be the right person.
Mark?
Sure. Well, natural gas, certainly you do have to extract from underground wells. But typically the extraction process for natural gas is cleaner and less environmentally has a less environmental impact than oil drilling. Natural gas is lighter than air, so a lot of the issues have been a number of these gas and oil wells, they'll just either flare off or just the natural gas goes off in the atmosphere, which is not necessarily a good thing for greenhouse gases, because methane is a much more potent greenhouse gas than even carbon dioxide. But when you look at what we call well-to-wheels greenhouse gas emissions for a natural gas vehicle, from the time the gas comes out of the well to the time that it actually is burned in the vehicle and the vehicle goes down the road, it's a 30% reduction in greenhouse gases for light-duty vehicles and 23% reduction for heavy-duty vehicles. And then the vehicles themselves are significantly cleaner than gasoline or diesel fuel.
Okay, that's Mark Riley, who's Eastern Regional Manager of the Clean Energy Corporation, one of the T. Boone Pickens companies. At least he founded the company. Jason Wager is with Central Atlanta Clean Fuels Coalition with the Central Atlanta Council of Governments. And Ron Servin is Project Development Engineer for Hybrid Technologies. They make all electric cars here in the Carolinas. We will continue our conversation in a moment. Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Our program is made possible in part today by Signature Healthcare, Charlotte's concierge medical group, providing patients with 24/7 physician access, individualized attention, executive physicals, and same-day appointments. SignatureHealthcare.org. And by 2008 Charlotte Literary Festival, September 6th at the Charlotte Convention Center. Speakers and authors include Susan Jeffers and Michael Beckwith, sci-fi fantasy costume contest, and more. Details at charlotteliteraryfestival.com. Next year, the Great Smoky Mountain National Park turns 75, but No candles for the celebration, please. They have a pollution problem up there. Some people say it's the most polluted national park in the country. They're under attack by acid rain and other pollutants. And North Carolina has brought a landmark lawsuit against one of the alleged polluters that could change the landscape of states' rights. We'll talk about that tomorrow and hear from North Carolina Attorney General Roy Cooper as well at 9.
The conflict in Georgia has inflamed long-simmering problems in the U.S.-Russian relationship. A look at how the two powers are positioning themselves in the Caucasus and beyond, and what it means for the future balance of global power. The Diane Rehm Show, Monday.
The Diane Rehm Show, this morning from 10 to noon, right after Charlotte Talks, here on 90.7 FM, WFAE.
Hi, this is Steve Inskeep with Morning Edition from NPR News. Day after day, through the presidential primaries, you were able to count on NPR News to bring you the latest.
I sincerely hope that the next president is here this evening.
Partnership and cooperation among nations is not a choice.
As we get closer to November 4th, you can count on us to continue that coverage. Tune in to Morning Edition from NPR News.
Weekday mornings from 5 till 9 on 90.7 WFAE, your NPR news source.
We're back at Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're in our Spirit Square studio with Ron Servin, Project Development Engineer for Hybrid Technologies, and Jason Wager with the Central Atlanta Clean Fuels Coalition. Mark Riley joins us by phone from New Hampshire. He's the Regional Manager of the Eastern Division of U.S. Clean Energy Corporation. A couple of weeks ago on this program, we did a discussion, among other things, about natural gas in general. And one of the things that came up in the course of that conversation is that the production of natural gas across the country seems to be just about pushing the limit, that we need more wells if we're going to increase our production of it, and demand is increasing. So if you're going to put natural gas in cars, won't we really have to push production, Mark?
Well, actually, it's kind of interesting. Just last month, an organization called the American Clean Skies Foundation, which is made up of some natural gas industry folks, they did a natural gas assessment for North America. And because of the recent technology advances in extracting gas from shale, we actually believe that there's much greater supply, upwards of about 50% more natural gas in the ground and known reserves than originally or was even estimated back in 2006. So we are, natural gas vehicles are kind of a relatively small blip in the and when you consider natural gas consumption in the United States. A lot of natural gas is used in home heating, obviously, but also in electric power plants because of its clean nature.
Right.
But with the transition to renewables and transition to other clean power, we suspect that there will be a need for new markets for natural gas vehicles or for natural gas in general. So, just even last week in the New York Times, there was an article talking about how natural gas producers in the United States are looking very hard for places to put natural gas because they're concerned of falling prices and lowering demand.
You just handed me, Jason, a magazine called American Clean Skies, the official journal of the American Clean Skies Foundation, which has a big article here about T. Boone Pickens in it, but it also has the cover story is Shale, America's New Ocean of Natural Gas, and they've mapped the continental United States and shown where these vast oceans of natural gas are purported to be or, in fact, are.
I handed it to you because this was the study he was just referring to, and Mark's probably a little more familiar with.
Okay, Mark.
Well, I mean, I definitely can provide some of the key points of this, but, this particular foundation, hired a group to go out and take a look at, we have all these known gas reserves that, have been estimated and determined that we have, say an 82-year supply of natural gas here in North America. But then they looked at, all these new shale resources where we typically were not able to extract gas up until, a few years ago. So there are a lot of companies now invested in the extraction of shale natural gas. And if you look at, you know, by looking at that map, I'm sure, Mike, you can see that there's a large swath of America that are now covered by these shale resources.
The biggest seems to be what appears to be from the map, the Appalachian Mountains or the Appalachian Mountains, depending upon your preference for pronunciation. How much damage does mining for this shale, et cetera, do to the natural topography?
You know, I'm sorry, Mike. I can't. Okay. Right. I don't know. I don't know the process.
All right. So let's talk about distribution. Well, it seems to me that electricity is the easiest distribution because everybody has electricity coming into their home. Almost everybody who can afford a car has electricity coming into their home. And your cars that you build, Ron, you just plug them in, right? There's no special hookup. Is it a special dryer type hookup, the 240 volt hookup, or is it just a normal plug into the wall that we see all over the house?
We have both. Actually, the charger that comes with your car, that's onboard charger, is a 220 volt or a 110 volt charger. But so the 220 volt, the same plug you use for your dryer, is enough power.
So there's an outboard charger that comes with these cars. Is that correct?
It's built into the car. Yeah, it's onboard charger, so it just comes with cords. So you can literally plug them in at work, you can plug them in at home, you can plug them in anywhere you want, anywhere that there's electricity.
And when you buy a natural gas car, if you can buy, I don't even know where you buy a natural gas car, but if you can buy one, Mark, the compressor that, I forgot what you called it, but the little unit that you have that compresses the natural gas that comes from your gas company into your home for your stove and your heater, how much does that unit cost?
Well, the unit costs about $3,500 installed, but there is a federal tax credit of that knocks the price off by about $1,000.
And is that federal tax credit expiring on December 31st this year, or is it going to continue on?
That particular tax credit, I believe, goes through the end of 2010. But it's still a $2,500 investment up front, but when I look at, you know, how I'm fueling my vehicle, with a Honda Civic, you know, you're going to get about 35 to 40 miles a gallon. So you're not putting a lot of fuel in your vehicle, but assuming that you do 500 gallons a year, over 3 years, you know, you're looking at about $1.50 just for the ownership. So your fuel costs are probably still around, you know, $2.80 or $3.20, depending on the your locality and your gas
company. Per gallon.
Per gallon.
So you're not really saving a lot of money at the moment, at least, over gasoline.
Not necessarily with the home refueler. In places out in California where natural gas, you know, at your home is quite cheap. There are folks who are fueling their vehicles for $1.80 a gallon versus, you know, $4.25 in gasoline.
How many miles per gallon do you get?
I get about 35 to 40 miles a gallon.
Really? In the city or highway?
A little bit of both. It's probably more highway driving than city driving.
And you drive
in New Hampshire, we don't have much traffic.
And you drive a Honda Civic natural gas?
Yeah, it's called a Honda Civic GX.
What kind of mileage would you get from a Honda Civic gasoline powered car?
It's actually equivalent. It's about the same. I think the new Honda Civics are rated at 29 in the city and 34 on the highway or something like that. With natural gas, you're going to get the same miles per gallon.
The reason that a person would at this point in time gravitate toward a natural gas automobile would be because they're concerned about the environment, not because they don't want to, not because of gasoline prices or because.
It'd be all of that. It would be because you're concerned about gasoline prices to some extent, and you're more concerned about your dependence on petroleum, foreign petroleum specifically.
Right.
So now and you're right about air quality as well. You see significant reductions, hydrocarbons, NOx, so forth.
What about electricity? Let's talk about that for a second. These electric powered cars, some of them are very small. What's the car they sell at Mercedes that we talked about just before the show started?
That's a smart car.
Smart car. They run gasoline, but you also build them with electric power. And you also have a PT Cruiser, which you don't call a PT Cruiser, but it is a PT Cruiser. I guess you buy it from Chrysler and you turn it into a Surge, which is all electric power, correct?
That's correct. When they drive into our store, they're a PT Cruiser, and when they leave, they're a Surge.
Okay, and the same thing goes. You have a Toyota product that you call the Wise, and a couple of other products here, including a motorcycle, and what looks to be, is that what I think it is? Is that a, what's it called?
That starts out a Mini Cooper.
A Mini Cooper, yes. All right, so if you plug these cars in at home, what does it cost to fill up to fully charge the car?
But if you take all those cars and put an average in, it's right around $2.20 to drive 120 miles. So it's
wow.
Very, very so low cost.
How do you? I can't say miles per gallon, can I? What's the cost per mile? Do you
Well, the equivalent of miles per gallon right now is at about 187, I believe it is, miles per gallon if you go by cost.
When you say cost, that includes the cost of converting the car?
Well, it would just be your energy cost. So whether you're using gasoline or electricity, the electricity energy used will drive your car about 187 miles of the gallon for what it's costing you.
What's the cruising range?
120 miles is the average. The little cars tend to go a little bit further, but that's average.
And what do you do? Just carry a very long extension cord in the trunk in case you're not home and you need to recharge the car? What do you do?
Well, that's what's so unique about the cars with them having onboard chargers and them running electricity and not, you know, a less available fuel that you can plug them in literally anywhere. We have places like Air Force bases and stuff down NASA and that type of thing, where they're actually putting plug-in stations in front of all the buildings, and that way you can plug in while you're in there at work.
Yeah.
And because the cost is so low, a lot of the businesses and a lot of the big corporations, realistically, it's a great thing for them because it's good publicity that they're doing their part, and then they're offering the employees that do have electric cars a place to charge them.
So here in the Carolinas, if you were to buy one of these things and you were to forget, you leave for work one morning and you look at your little charging gauge and you think, oh, darn, I should have charged the car overnight. I can get to work, but I don't know if I can get home. What then? Because we're not, most of our business, I would say, don't have a place to plug your car in necessarily.
And just last I knew, I think the Duke Energy deck had put in electric charging stations.
Well, they would, wouldn't they?
Yeah, yeah. Now that was sort of the first generation, if you will, back in the 90s in anticipation of that. And I believe they're still there.
So what do you do? What do you recommend to your people that come in and buy these cars? What do you tell them?
I mean, that's just it's the same thing as, you know, you want to plan ahead whether you're driving your gasoline car, your electric car, whatever it is. But, you know, the unique thing about the electric car is wherever you park it overnight, you just plug it in. When you wake up in the morning, it's charged.
So if you're low, if you're running low because you forgot to fill it up, how long does it have to charge before you can drive it home?
A full charge, if you actually drove it all the way down to zero, is about 6 to 8 hours.
Okay.
But because of their lithium batteries and the chemistry of the lithium that we're using, there is no memory. So you can charge it. You can put a 10% charge on it. You can put a 20% charge on it. It doesn't matter.
Okay.
So it's you can more or less just like topping it off and heading out.
Same question, Mark. If you got to plan ahead, I would think if you have a natural gas-powered car, because if you're not home near your fill-up location, you're not going to be able to pull into your local gas station in all likelihood and get a fill-up. What do you do?
Right. Well, Mike, our typical clients or customers are fleet, you know, return-to-base type of fleets. And so that's been really our main focus, looking at trash trucks and transit buses and so on. There are only a couple places in the United States where the infrastructure is in such a, you know, is in such a good place that, you know, where you have a true retail market where, you know, a person will, you know, drive a natural gas vehicle to and from work. And we see that, you know, in and around New York City. We see that, in Dallas and Denver. And in Southern California, in Phoenix as well.
But if you're a gas station, I don't want to mention any names, but if you're a brand name gas station and you have natural gas heat coming into your building for the wintertime, how difficult would it be to put a pump that has already compressed the natural gas, et cetera, so all you have to do is pull up and put the gas into your car? How difficult would that be to do?
Well, it's not, it's not something that you can do overnight. It would certainly require a little bit of research and homework. But, you know, we have facilities partnered with a number of the major oil companies, in some of our networks as well, where we have a true, you know, we kind of have a retail, you know, true retail fueling station where, you know, we're integrated with the gasoline pumps and so on and so forth. And, you know, there's really, you know, we actually have some customers who pull up to our pump thinking that they can gas up their gasoline vehicles, because they look so similar. I guess to get back to your question, you know, if you go to a retail fueling facility, you know, you're going to fuel up in three to 5 minutes. The home refueler that I was talking about earlier, you know, it's really truly an overnight fill, very much like recharging, a battery pack of an electric vehicle.
Okay.
You definitely have to plan your trips. But you know, I've driven from New Hampshire to Washington in a natural gas vehicle that only runs on natural gas. And
how do you get back?
The same way I came.
and Mike, here in Charlotte, you know, and I think the same would go for anyone that has one of those vehicles. They're going to know where the fueling stations are. They're going to be zeroed into those. And for instance, here in Charlotte, by appointment with Piedmont Natural Gas, you could go and fill. So if you got there to work at 9 a.m., with one phone call, you could say, "Hey, could I stop by to go fuel
what
before I can get home?"
What I don't hear from you and what I don't hear from Mark Riley is any urgency about this. There doesn't seem to be any great burning desire to make these filling opportunities prolific.
Yeah, I think what Mark said is where our focus is as well, as on fleets. So oftentimes,
why? There are far more cars on the road that don't belong to fleets.
Well, the big thing is the central fueling as a sort of low-hanging fruit. When you've got 100 vehicles that go out and come back to the same place each day,
okay,
it just makes a lot more sense.
Let me bring someone into the conversation. If you'd like to join our conversation, 704-926-WFAE. That's 704-926-9323, 800-603-WFAE. You can email us at charlottetalks@wfae.org. Paul in Charlotte, welcome to the program.
Hi, Mike. I'm a local home builder here in Charlotte. I just wanted to call in and let you know that we are actually putting two fuel stations in for some new homes we're building here in Charlotte. And a lot of what the speakers are talking about are challenges, but, you know, here in Charlotte, Piedmont Natural Gas, we've met with them several times. The gas gallon equivalent for natural gas is about $2.20 a gallon in the Charlotte area. So it's a pretty significant gap between gasoline and natural gas when it comes to that as an alternative fuel source. And the fuel stations, they're talking about possibly letting you lease those stations as opposed to purchasing them outright.
Okay, so you're doing this at the request of a homeowner, or are you putting this in as a feature?
We're putting it in as a feature. It's a fairly simple installation. In fact, looking at it from a new home, it's really not that difficult at all. And upfitting an existing home wouldn't be that difficult. You're going to have a power source to power the pump, and you're going to have a gas line that would allow them to put a separate meter so that they can charge you the road tax for the gas.
Ah, the road tax. Is the same true about electric-powered cars? I mean, if you're going to fill up your electric-powered car, is the state going to want their road tax?
Well, we have not been approached with any questions like that or demands of that.
We've just opened a Pandora's box, haven't we?
There has been some national talk about how to, because there is a road tax deficit, basically, if we start using all these alternative cars. So, yeah, there's definitely something. You know, we've heard a little bit of talk about how they're going to try to recoup the lost taxes now.
Right. Paul, thank you for your call. We have to take a break. We're going to come back with more of our conversation. I got 1,000 more questions about this, so stay with us. Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Our program is made possible in part today by Time Warner Cable Business Class, offering business-grade communications tools, including dedicated access, fiber solutions, managed security, remote data storage, and now Business Class Phone, carolinas.twcbc.com. And by University Volvo on North Tryon Street, now transforming from the 2008 models to the 2009 models, arriving daily, universityvolvo.com. Coming up at 10 o'clock on the Diane Rehm Show, the conflict in Georgia has inflamed simmering problems in the U.S.-Russia relationship. Diane takes a look at how the two nations are positioning themselves in the Caucasus. Is that how you say that? And beyond. And where the balance of global power may be headed. That's in the first hour. And then, in the second hour, DNA evidence has helped free thousands of wrongly incarcerated individuals, but faulty eyewitness accounts and a lack of genetic evidence leave many innocent people behind bars. A criminal attorney describes how she helped free a woman wrongly imprisoned for almost three decades. Abby Smith joins Diane in the 11 o'clock hour. She's the author of a book called Case of a Lifetime and professor of law and co-director of the Criminal Justice Clinic at Georgetown University. Our numbers, if you want to join our conversation, 704-926-WFAE, 800-603-WFAE, which is 9323, or charlottetalks@WFAE.org. We're back in 60 seconds.
Every 4 years, Democrats and Republicans gather to nominate their candidates for president.
Accept the nomination of the Democrats.
I have the highest honor of accepting your nomination.
I proudly accept your nomination for president.
This year, John McCain and Barack Obama will accept their party's nominations. Join us for special coverage of the 2008 conventions from NPR News.
Coverage starts Monday, August 25th, here on 90.7 WFAE, your source for news this election year.
Taking in the whole picture. It's why you can depend on WFAE this election year. If you found yourself listening more for the essential ideas, comments, and analysis that will help you make an informed choice in November, remember, your financial support of WFAE ensures comprehensive coverage on 90.7. Help support the coverage you depend on now at WFAE.org. Thanks.
It's Charlotte Talks on 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins, and we're talking with Theron Servin, Project Development Engineer for Hybrid Technologies. They make electric cars here in the Carolinas. Jason Wager is with the Central Atlanta Council of Governments Central Atlanta Clean Fuels Coalition, and Mark Riley is the Eastern Regional Manager for the Clean Energy Corporation. He joins us by phone from New Hampshire. One of our callers just a moment ago said that he mentioned the tax implications of this and how we need to, you know, we use these taxes, these fuel taxes, to build roads. When you gave us the amount of money it costs to fill up a natural gas-powered vehicle and what it costs to run it by the mile, did that include the road taxes, Mark?
Actually, the number I gave you did include the federal tax.
And you mentioned
right now, currently the federal tax for a homeowner is actually rebated back. There's a federal what they call it, the volumetric excise tax credit, which is in place to assist or to help promote the development of alternative fuel infrastructure. Mm-hmm. And homeowners actually can apply for this, and really it just kind of nets out zero tax for the federal government, at the end of each quarter, end of each year. So it really nets out.
And we were talking about it in the studio during the break, and Ron, you mentioned that so far no one's been able to figure out how to tax you on electric power, because even if you put a meter in just for your car in the garage, nothing would prevent you from running an electric extension cord into the house to charge your car overnight, correct?
I mean, that, like I said, it's a matter of how creative you want to get.
Yeah. Jason, your organization has made a list of alternative fuels for vehicles and their comparative costs and benefits. Biodiesel is on that list as one that would be relatively easy to integrate into existing distribution infrastructure. How clean or dirty is biodiesel in comparison to regular diesel, or in comparison to gasoline, for that matter?
Yeah, you'd probably compare it to diesel, and it's something that we're typically looking at as a B20 blend, so 20% biodiesel, 80% diesel, and the reason for that is that's what manufacturers, by and large, have accepted is an acceptable blend level. That said, it's you're going to see reductions in carbon monoxide, hydrocarbons, particulate matter, which is a big one from a health standpoint. And then on the NOx issue, we've seen anywhere from a slight gain of 1 to 2% to actually, again, a 10% reduction, depending on whether you look at the duty cycle, in other words, driving the vehicles, versus in lab tests.
And where does the bio part of the biodiesel come from?
Well, you've got several feedstocks that could range from fats, chicken fat, and so forth, to what's all often called like virgin products, like soy oils, canola as well.
So we've seen a jump in food prices because of the use of ethanol. What would a greater use of biodiesel do to food prices? Because these are food products for the most part.
Yeah, we need to probably separate the two discussions, biodiesel being on the sort of in the diesel column and ethanol being more in the gasoline replacement column. You know, I'm glad you asked. I actually had just pulled some figures from June of this year where the Department of Energy had done some analysis, and they looked at gasoline prices would be between 20 to 35 cents per gallon higher without ethanol. So
in essence, what about food prices? Because evidently the price of corn has gone up, obviously, but it also affects other things because animals eat corn, and the corn is going into the production of ethanol, which is raising the price of feed for animals, which is raising the price of food for everybody. So I'm not sure that's a very smart thing to do.
Well, there's a couple answers to that.
Okay.
As far as the ethanol itself, right now it's predominantly produced from corn.
Right.
So that's the discussion today. In the future, and not too far off, we just held a conference two weeks ago, where we had some folks from Novozymes out of Franklin to North Carolina come speak. And they're talking about having an enzyme that will break down cellulosic or woody biomass and other types of products by 2010.
So you'd use
commercially.
You'd use the stalk of the product and not the food portion
and
of
so
the
forth.
Product.
So in other words, the whole discussion will move. But to answer your question, 4% is what DOE has come up with as the amount of food price increase that's probably related to ethanol. So not that much.
Last week during Open Phone, someone brought up the subject of hemp, which is allegedly a plant product that grows prolifically with very little help. It doesn't require a lot of fertilizer. It grows in various different climates. It would be prolific throughout the United States. You can do all kinds of things with it, including, I'm told, build car bodies with it, or at least the sheet metal could be replaced by hemp byproducts. And you can use it for the production of ethanol. Why is there such a resistance to hemp?
You know, I get the sense that it is that the answer is going to be mostly tied to political. I think technically speaking, everything you just said is accurate. So
political because it is a close relative of marijuana?
Basically, that's my understanding.
But the drug portion of marijuana is not in the hemp. So what difference does it make?
Good question. And I've seen enough.
Why are people asking this question?
Good question. And I've seen enough.
That's stopping us from asking this question or getting an answer to the question or having people look into this as a question?
I haven't been able to, in what I've read, find that out, exactly who or which groups are behind.
Now, over the weekend in Charlotte, there was and I'm not sure what to say about this, there was a bunch of cars that came through and a little viewing of these cars from various manufacturers that were powered by hydrogen fuel cells. BMW is a company that is already producing. I'm not sure it's for sale, but they have produced a hydrogen fuel cell car, and they were among the people who were at this gathering, and they handed this out to people. I'm putting that on the desk. It is a bottle of water. It looks just like a bottle of water you'd buy at the convenience store to drink, but it's labeled exhaust. Because BMW's hydrogen-powered vehicle, it says here on the back of the label, produces near-zero emissions, which means the exhaust creates water vapor instead of carbon dioxide, reducing pollution and greenhouse gases. Plus, the BMW Hydrogen 7 isn't just environmentally friendly, it's also extremely powerful, boasting a 12-cylinder engine and a top speed of well over 130 miles per hour. So enjoy another purely brilliant idea from BMW. Their marketing people got a hold of that, but that is a brilliant idea. Exhaust, there it is, a bottle of water. Is that true?
Yeah, Yeah, you know, basically the Hydrogen Road Tour is going on right now, as you mentioned. It's going across the country in the next week. It started last week in Maine. Mm-hmm. And what you're seeing is about a dozen original equipment manufacturers, OEMs, with Department of Transportation and Department of Energy and the California Fuel Cell Partnership essentially bring these cars on the road to show that, yes, in fact, these exist. They're not all talk. Mm-hmm. You know, the big question, just like we've had on these other fuels, is handling, distribution, storage of the fuel, and getting it out to the cars.
And with hydrogen, there is this question of safety, and we talked about this on an earlier program, because of the Hindenburg. People remember the Hindenburg blowing up, and it was a hydrogen blimp. And few further studies have shown that it probably wasn't the hydrogen that caused the problem. It was the coating on the outer surface of the blimp that caused the problem. But if hydrogen, a gas, in your gas tank causes people to have fear, what about natural gas in your gas tank? I mean, houses blow up because the gas, there's a gas leak. What about that, Mark?
Well, I mean, actually, natural gas is it's more difficult to burn natural gas than it is gasoline or diesel. You can't just strike a match and light pure natural gas. It needs to be blended with air at a very specific range of air to natural gas mixtures to actually ignite. So, you know, when you consider natural gas in your vehicle versus gasoline or diesel, which if you are in a rear-end collision, you know, gasoline or diesel will pull underneath your vehicle, and, you know, if there's any ignition source in the area, it could explode. With natural gas, these cylinders they are literally bulletproof and dynamite-proof as they're tested, and so the fuel is typically maintained within the cylinder, even in some very violent.
And when we did this program on hydrogen-powered cars, someone said even if the cylinder that contained the hydrogen was penetrated, unlike gasoline, which would then spill out onto the ground, and if there was a flame source, would ignite. The hydrogen would immediately, because it's lighter than air, go up into the air, and if there was an explosion, it would be above your head.
Correct.
Is that same true with natural gas?
Same thing with natural gas.
You mentioned a safe... I'm sorry, go ahead, Mark.
I did want to point out that, you know, we've partnered with General Motors out in California to support their Project Driveway program, which is a program to deploy hydrogen fuel cell vehicles with just standard retail customers. And so we have going to be fueling up at our compressed natural gas and now hydrogen fueling station out in Los Angeles. And, actually the neat thing about hydrogen and natural gas is that natural gas is principally hydrogen. It's about 80% of the molecule is hydrogen. So you have the opportunity of blending even a higher percentage of hydrogen in the gas stream to, you know, reduce emissions even further and also create infrastructure for hydrogen vehicles in the future.
I'm staring out the window at a Prius. It's parked in the parking lot. And there have been concerns about the batteries in these hybrid gasoline automobiles. And you alluded, when I talked about the potential of having an electric car race circuit, that there would be questions about safety because there's a relatively high voltage coming from these batteries. What about the safety of all electric cars from the driver's standpoint? If you have an accident, or if you need to work on the car yourself, or if you want to retrofit it with something and you climb under the car near the batteries, is there danger involved here?
Yeah, we've got two devices on our cars. The first one would be an inertia switch. If you are in an accident, and even a fairly minor one, the inertia switch actually opens the circuit and stops all the high power from the batteries. So it actually breaks the cells apart, so then there's no more high voltage in the vehicle itself. What makes the batteries have up to the 300-plus volts that we run is because of the way that they're linked together. So the inertia switch actually breaks them apart, and now all of a sudden you have a bunch of 4-volt batteries, or depending on the state of charge at that time.
Right.
So the reality is now all of a sudden you just got in an accident and you just have some very low voltage batteries.
Some flashlight batteries hanging around you.
Right. Then getting into the service state, or somebody wanted to add a 12 volt option on their car. I mean, you still have 12 volts, you still have all that kind of stuff. But anytime you're working on the car, it's not a bad idea to go ahead and disable the high voltage. There's a switch inside your car, literally just a toggle switch, and you can actually disarm that whole battery pack the same way that the inertia switch automatically does it.
And what about disposing? One of the things that people, it seems to me that the profile of the people who are buying natural gas cars and electric cars and hybrid cars is not just because they want to save money, although that's certainly part of it. They also have a concern for the environment. They think they're doing their part to wean us off oil and foreign oil and pollution. But there is some concern about what happens to these batteries, these enormous batteries, once they have expended, they've outlived their lifetime, or the car simply doesn't run anymore because cars get old and you get rid of them and they go to the junkyard. What happens to these batteries? What does it do to the environment?
The batteries that we're currently using and the technology that's inside of them, the majority of the batteries completely recyclable and reusable now.
Really? So there's no waste issue?
No, it's very minimal, and there's actually some websites that you can go to that will actually show you where to recycle those particular lithium batteries also.
And is there an infrastructure for that? If you take a car in and you just dump it because you're buying a new one, is there an infrastructure for car dealers and junkyards to dispose of these batteries in a safe manner? Are there laws concerning the disposal of these batteries in a safe manner, or the recycling of these batteries?
The websites that you could find will tell you exactly where to recycle them,
I mean, the consumer that bought the car might be concerned about that, but would the junkyard the car ultimately ends up in, would they be concerned about it? Are they held to some standard that they have to be concerned about that?
I don't believe that there is like a rule or a law that they have to go by right now. So it is, on the honor of junkyard or dismantler that has that vehicle.
Like now you see with solid waste laws in North Carolina, oil waste and tires and so forth are recovered. I think that it's in just a matter of time we'll see batteries just lumped in there.
Okay, Martin couldn't hold, but he wanted to know if our guest could explain the difference between propane and natural gas. Mark, I guess, maybe.
Sure. Well, propane is a natural gas, but the properties of propane and what we call natural gas, that you cook with, you tie into a pipeline and cook with at your home, heat your home, so on, are significantly different. Propane is heavier than air, so it actually will pool like gasoline, while natural gas or methane is lighter than air. And goes up into the atmosphere.
So is that why when I go and fill up my little cylinder for my gas grill, I can't do it myself?
Well, I think that's part of it. But the other thing is that propane is also very cold, so you need to be careful of that, as well as the process, I guess, probably isn't as easy as filling up a gasoline vehicle. But I guess, just to even kind of help you even imagine the differences, when you pick up that propane cylinder and you kind of swish it around, you can hear it almost sounds like water's inside. And propane is really in liquid form.
Mark Riley is Eastern Regional Manager of the Clean Energy Corporation. I wish we had more time, but we are out of it. Ron Servin is the Project Development Engineer for Hybrid Technologies. You can get them. You can see more about them at hybridtechnologies.com. A North Carolina company, and Jason Wager is with the Centralina Council of Governments. Thank you all for being here. It's been an interesting hour. Who knows what we'll be driving in the next 5 years? Maybe one of your cars.
Charlotte Talks with Mike Collins is a production of 90.7 WFAE. Our senior producer is Wendy Herkey. The associate producer is Tim Ross. Aaron Sutton is our research assistant, and our engineer is Joby Sprinkle. For more information about Charlotte Talks archives, upcoming shows, and podcasts, go to WFAE.org.
And our program is made possible in part today by 123NC.com, instant access to North Carolina criminal records and nationwide background checks. Criminal records can be searched instantly online at 123NC.com. And by Graduation by Design, an event this October 9th for educators and leaders who want more students to graduate ready for college, career, and life. On the web at newschoolsproject.org.
While you've been on vacation this summer, WFAE's news team has been hard at work covering the breaking news.
Wachovia plans to cut 600 more jobs than previously announced.
And the stories that make summer special.
I see these kids come running out, yelling and waving, and I think, oh no, they want ice cream, they're going to be so disappointed. But no, they wanted the books. And they're like, the book people are here, the book people are here.
Catch all the WFAE stories you missed while you were away. Go to WFAE.org.
I'm Mike Collins. Next year, the Great Smoky Mountain National Park celebrates its 75th anniversary, but the celebration may be muted. The Great Smoky Mountains are under attack by acid rain and other pollutants, and the state of North Carolina has brought a landmark lawsuit against one of the alleged polluters that could change the landscape of states' rights. We'll talk about the environment of the Great Smoky Mountains and spend time with North Carolina Attorney General Roy Cooper when Charlotte talks tomorrow at 9 on 90.7 WFAE. Sunny highs in the upper 80s, mid-60s tonight under clear skies, around 90 under clear skies and sunshine on Tuesday. But then, Faye may make his presence known and dump a lot of rain on us. We'll keep our fingers crossed. We need it. 74 now, WFAE Charlotte, WFHE Hickory.
From WAMU.